Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Let's kick this episode off with an excerpt from the New York Times bestseller, Walk to Beautiful, The Power of Love and a Homeless Kid Who Found His Way, a memoir written by Jimmy Wayne. Leonard's face was bleeding. Mama wasn't saying a word, and Patricia was leaning into Mama's side, frantically holding on to her. We sat there stunned and scared. Then the man's silhouette came sliding between the car bumpers again. This time he carried a hatchet. He quickly maneuvered his legs between the two cars' bumpers and ran around to the driver's side, where Leonard was still sitting, dazed and semi-conscious. I looked up from the back seat through the driver's side window into the attacker's angry eyes as he jerked open the front car door. Okay. The passage I just read is one of many powerful and often shocking parts of Jimmy Wayne's life. And now it's time to meet the man behind this story. He's our special guest today, Jimmy Wayne, the author of Walk to Beautiful, and the country music singer and songwriter. He's also the author of the novel and made-for-TV movie Paper Angels. Jimmy's here to share the story of his life with you and how he overcame adversity. Jimmy, I'm so happy to have you on my show today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Deirdre.
It's a pleasure, and the excerpt that I just read from your book, Walk to Beautiful, really portrays a time in your life on Van Street, and I'll tell you something. I get chills with every reference of Van Street in your book because of the horror that you experienced there. So let's discuss a little bit. Maybe you can briefly take us back to when you were younger and what went through your mind as a child growing up on the street or in different homes.
Well, Van Street was one of those streets. It seems like every city in America has a Van Street or a neighborhood like this. We didn't know it was a rough neighborhood. My mom was a single parent. She struggled financially, and she looked for the cheapest place for us to live, and it happened to be Van Street. This street was filled with drugs, prostitution, just crime, and we edited out about three murders.
Oh my!
Before I was 8 years old, so this was just one of the murders that I witnessed when I was 7 years old. I was in the back seat of a car, and I witnessed this guy. I don't know what they were fighting about, but it didn't matter on Van Street because there's just violence every single day. And this is just one scenario of what goes on Van Street or went on Van Street back in the late 70s.
That's really, really scary. As a child, how do you find safety? How did you even cope with that?
You know, it was life. I mean, it was every day. So you know, I'm asked that question, like, did it not scare you? I was scared, but it was happening around me all the time. So it wasn't like one episode. It was something was happening all the time. I mean, there was 100 pages edited out of this book because we had so much information, and you can only tell so much and talk about one thing so many times. I mean, that murder was in addition to another guy who walked into our house one evening holding his stomach, and his arms were crossed. And what he was doing is he was literally holding his stomach together, like he'd been cut. And that's just the kind of things that we saw all the time, and just tons of crime. I think I just, you know, being a kid, being 7 years old, 8 years old, my sister was eight, just being a kid really saved our life, because had we been an older teenager or an adult, we could have easily been caught right up in the middle of all, because these people just attacked everybody. if you were an adult, you just got in a fight. Even the preacher who lived next door came over to our house one day with a gun because he was mad someone had thrown a beer can in his yard. And so it was just that kind of environment. So being a kid probably saved our life.
Well, that is a really scary environment. And, you know, in Walk to Beautiful, which was a very well-written book, I found it hard to put down. I read before I go to sleep. And let me tell you, I went to sleep later and later every night until I finished it. But it talks about you as the, you know, the homeless kid who found his way. So you clearly spent time in the foster care system. What would you like to share with listeners about what children go through in the foster care system? And maybe do you, you know, any thoughts about these kids being labeled?
Well, my sister and I both, we eventually ended up in foster care. You can only imagine why. We went in, I think I was 8, my sister was 9, and I think a lot of people perceive these children as being bad kids, troubled kids, poor kids, and it's not necessarily just that, or any of that. It's they can become bad kids, and that's exactly what happened to Billy the Kid. I mean, he didn't start off being a bad person. He started off being an orphan. So, and when you're an orphan and you don't get help, you have to steal food, which inevitably you end up with a criminal record. And that's what happens to a lot of these kids. They don't start off bad. They're just in bad situations. And my sister and I migrated around through the foster care system. One thing that I'd like to talk about is keeping the siblings together, because
yes,
that's the longest relationship we'll ever have is with our siblings, unless one is abusive to the other one. Now, they
right.
have to be separated. But my sister being with me through the system, I'm telling you, I mean, she was the only one there for me at times. I mean, in and out of the foster care system. She baked me my 10th birthday cake. You know, I was 10 years old. She was up early that morning baking. She burnt it, but she baked it.
And, oh, that's so sweet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's who she was. And so, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, they're not bad. They're not bad kids at first, but they can easily end up becoming criminals if we don't help them on the front end. And that's been my mission, is to help these kids in the system.
You know, being in the foster home, and I think this, what you just said about siblings being together probably leads into my next question of learning to cope. But if you're not able to have a sibling with you, how does a child learn to cope with being with a new family? Or, you know, even I'm sure in some cases, and there was some, I remember in your book, a story almost like not being wanted.
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, it's like, you know, it's not your normal environment. You know, this family who took me in when I was, I think I was about 14, you know, they were a middle-class family. I was not used to that lifestyle, sitting at the table, eating with the family. And I mean, I'd grown up where I would literally go into convenience stores and ask for food, much less sitting at a table with a family and eating. So it was so different. I think it's the family has to understand that when they bring a kid into their home, it's not like bringing a pet fish in your house
yeah.
You know, you're bringing in a kid that's completely different, and you have to give that kid, look, you have to be firm, fair, and consistent, because that's what they understand. They don't understand baby talk.
Right.
They understand toughness. They understand you giving them a direct order and being very, very honest with them. Cause they can tell if you're not being honest. I mean, and when you're not honest, they don't trust you. And when
yeah.
they don't trust you, then you're going to have problems.
That's right. And trust is it's hard to build trust. And once you
yeah.
get that trust, you never want to break it.
Absolutely. I wrote a song called Elephant Ears. It is a crazy title.
That's a great title.
It's about a kid who grew up in the foster care system, moved around a lot, could not get close to anyone because she had been moved from home to home to home, she just stopped trusting people. So she carried this little stuffed elephant with her. And she finally was rescued by this family. And they knew that when they told her they loved her and she didn't say it back, they knew why. It's like, well, so they told her, they said, just say elephant ears. When we say I love you, just say elephant ears back to us. So at the end of the song, you realize, or she realizes, that all these years she'd been saying elephant ears to them when they say I love you, is when you say it without making a sound and your lips move, it looks like you're saying, I love you.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Yes, it's a cute little song.
I'm going to have to go and listen to that song. That sounds beautiful. And you know what? There's a lot of meaning behind that. And I'm sure you made a lot of people happy by sharing that song.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you, because I know there were parts in the book where you were in school, you know, you lived in different places and, you know, you were attending classes. And what role do you think education plays, and how important is that, your teachers?
You know, I'm on my high horse about this education system and the lack of respect we're giving our teachers. I can't even tell you how much it infuriates me that we allow our children to go to school and fight a school teacher. They're underpaid, they're overworked, just like a social worker, and just like they're the first, they're raising our children. They're I would say creating almost the next generation. And it's like, how in the world do we think it's even fair to them to allow these kids to go and disrespect them? It is so important that we embrace and nurture and respect and take care of our school teachers right here in America. Education is very important. Obviously, I failed lunch going through the system. I mean, I couldn't hardly spell. I couldn't write or anything. So it was my sixth grade teacher, though, Miss Friday, who inspired me and encouraged me to start writing. She stayed on me. She would not give up on me. She wore me out. I was in her sixth grade class twice. She was just a very strict lady. And back then, you know, they could whip you. It had a leather strap. She would use a leather strap. Now,
oh my goodness.
Some people say, well, that's bad. You know, guess what? There was no guns in school, and I'm
right.
Not in prison. I'm not in
prison.
Yeah. And Miss Friday got through to me, and to this very day, she and I still stay in touch. But she was a very strict teacher. I just can't say enough good things about her. I am where I'm at today because of my teachers and my guidance counselor, Cindy Ballard, and history teacher, Mr. Carpenter, and shop making, cabinet making teacher, Mr. Davis. I mean, all of these people play such a major role in my life. I wouldn't be here. Wouldn't have a New York Times bestseller had it not been for these school teachers. So I can't even express it enough how important it is for us to respect our teachers, teach our kids to respect them, because these teachers are getting the blame for the kids not making great grades. How twisted is that? I mean, it's like
right.
You got a kid who comes to school. Well, it goes back to, here's what it goes back to. I believe in my heart. He goes back to the house where the single mom is having to work three jobs because the deadbeat dad has left the family. See, if these kids had a backbone in the family, a dad right there working and providing for the family, you know, in conjunction with the wife,
right,
with the family, that family unit, these kids would not be doing what they're doing in school. They wouldn't be fist fighting these teachers. And these men, you see these men when you log on the internet and you see these men teachers fighting these young boys, that's because they don't have a dad at home. If they had a dad at home, put them in their place, they wouldn't go to school and fist fight their teacher.
Right,
I know I wouldn't
foundation.
Fist fight a teacher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely not. Well, I come from a family of educators, so your comments about treating teachers, and you know, I'm certainly on that page and the respect that they deserve. My mom will be happy to hear me say that.
Yeah.
But your teachers saw something in you. And that's so important as an educator today to find that. And to, there's lots of troubled kids. There's happy ones too, but there's kids who are having a tough time. And rather than a label of that's a bad kid, it's to get to the bottom. And if it is to be strict, to give discipline in a way that, you know, helps them to advance, like in your case, it certainly shows. And that kind of segues into, you mentioned a wonderful campaign during an earlier conversation that you're doing with Coca-Cola and Crystal that raises awareness with educators. Maybe you can share your involvement with this program and how, you know, Coke is helping out here.
Coca-Cola reached out to me recently and asked if I would be interested in partnering with Crystal franchise. It's a Southeastern, predominantly Southeastern popular franchise. And asking me if I had any ideas for maybe promoting this country fried steak Crystal. And I thought, the first thing I thought about was, how in the world am I going to do this? Because I thought about my teacher, Crystal Friday, Miss Friday. Her name is Crystal Friday. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. So Crystal franchise, and then I put it together, like, what if educators go to Crystal and eat on Fridays for free? And so we put together this campaign, this promotion, and getting ready to launch it very soon. It's very exciting because it is commemorating. It's paying the respect that we need and raising awareness that we need to raise for these. It's a start to raise the awareness for these educators like Miss Friday, who, like I said before, changed my life. She saw me write. She read something that I had written. Maybe it was a poem. Maybe it was a rap song or something I had started writing. And she realized that, you know, there's a seed there. I mean, this, and started investing in, and made me work hard. She didn't do it all for me. She just made me work. So Coca-Cola is very supportive. Crystal is really excited about this campaign. And we hope to just raise the awareness, as much awareness as we can for educators. And, you know, get it in these kids' heads that they need to respect their teachers.
Well, it sounds like an awesome campaign, and we're looking forward to hearing and learning more about it. I've been chatting with my special guest, Jimmy Wayne, author of Walk to Beautiful. In the next segment, Jimmy will share the important lessons he's learned through his journey and more on how his story is really helping children in foster homes today. And I also want to take a moment to let you know that this episode of Women Worldwide is brought to you by Realty Shares. We've been hearing a lot about disruptive technologies lately, and Realty Shares is proving to be one of them for the real estate finance industry. Here's what I've learned about the company and what I like. So one easy way to invest in real estate, and whether that's in California, Texas, New York, or any of the 50 states, is through a real estate crowdfunding website. So there are a few out there, but RealtyShares.com has the lowest investment minimums. If you're an accredited investor, you can invest as little as $5,000 per transaction in residential or commercial real estate projects across the U.S. And I also like how RealtyShares has real estate deals sourced and vetted by experienced pros. So thousands of investors are already using the platform to browse through deals, and they're investing in minutes. But like any investment, they can be risky and they may lose value. So you want to remember that past performance is not indicative of future results. So if you're interested in real estate investments using a crowdfunded platform, then you should check out Realty Shares. Just go to realtyshares.com/worldwide to create a free account. And here's something special for Women Worldwide listeners for the month of April. You can sign up at realtyshares.com/worldwide. And when you link a bank account, Realty Shares will transfer $50 into that linked account. Now you can visit realtyshares.com/worldwide and start investing today.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Jimmy Wayne, country music artist and author of Walk to Beautiful, and I were just discussing his story, moving through the foster care system, and really learning how to cope as a young child with many of the experiences that he went through. So back to our discussion, Jimmy, what do you think is the most important lesson that you've learned on this journey called life?
To work. That is, to me, the most important resource because it helps me survive. And it helps me become relatively, if you will, successful. And but it was work. It started with my granddad, who was an old bootlegger. He sold white liquor. He carried a little gun in his pocket, and it was his twisted way of teaching me, because he'd say, "I'm not giving you anything. Get out there and work." And I was like 10 years old, so it was just, I'd go out to the golf course and pick golf balls out of the bushes, and I'd stand at the green and I'd sell them back to the golfers, and I would do things like this in the community. So I developed a work ethic as a young kid. That helped me survive, you know, being living on the street, being in the foster care system, being in the group homes, receiving homes. I'd always find things to do, chores, and they'd pay me a quarter, a nickel, a dime, or something like that to sweep the floors and vacuum and whatever. But I was always working. And working is that thing that I learned that saved my life. I mean, it's, to me, the most important thing, in conjunction with, in addition to my spiritual relationship, that is key. Working. We have to teach our kids to work, manually work, not sit in front of the TV. I'm talking about work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with technology the way that it is, it seems like younger generations, or, you know, if they're not in front of the TV, it's YouTube or, you know, they're on their smartphones. But that having that work ethic is so important. And I noticed in your book, it was also your work. You were helping your family as well.
Yeah, there was times when I was the only one working. You know, 16 and the only one working and providing food for the family. So, you know, and even younger than that, I was working and providing food for me and my sister. Because, you know, she wasn't out working. I didn't expect her to, but I had to figure it out. You know, I had to figure it out. She was 8 years old or whatever, 9 years old. I was 8 at this time, and I was working.
Well, I think
I don't even
good.
Know how I figured it out. Honestly, right. I just don't know how I missed the line of fire. I mean, it was just one of those things. I've just been able to do this my entire life, and it's just it's divine. I believe it 100%. I'm here. It's divine. It's just I figured it out very young, and I'm here to live about it, talk about it.
Yeah. Well, it seems like your granddad prompted something in you. You know, him saying, get out there and work. You know, the words always, you know, they help to push us, but I believe it's from within that will keep you thinking this way in your own personal drive and passion, mm-hmm. Which you clearly have and you've brought into your adult life, which is so important.
Well, there's nothing like being a kid and earning a few dollars. I mean, just try it. Just teach your kid that one time, and I promise you, they will catch on very quick. Hey, this is my money. Mom and Dad can't take it from me. I worked for it. There is nothing, and then they'll respect it. You know, they won't take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes with kids, we have four of them. Our money is their money, and their money is their money. You know how that goes, right?
Oh, yeah.
You had also said to me in an earlier conversation, a star shines for a reason. What did you mean by this?
Well, you know, when I moved to Nashville 18 years ago, you know, it was my dream to become a superstar. You hear it, I just don't really want to be. No, everybody wants to be a superstar in this business. I mean, anyone that says they don't is lying. Our egos are too big for that nonsense. It's, we want to be a superstar, and we want to be the biggest superstar. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen for the majority of the people. It didn't happen for me. However, my calling was to help these kids. You know, I tried to be a superstar. I tried to get away from all of this and not talk about it and move on with my life and never look back and not go into this. But it just would not leave me. And the more I would try to get away from it, the more the calling, the stronger the calling was. And I'd find myself doing some charity event for an organization helping children. And then I'd see these kids and it would just break my heart. And I'd be like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. It's not standing on stage, getting my flirt on and partying and all of those, you know,
right.
I'm supposed to be helping these kids. So I just found myself more and more falling in love with what I'm doing today. And that's, I truly love going out there helping these kids. I mean, people who can't, if they could help themselves, they would. It's just, I can't express that enough. We have to help them.
Right.
So being able to help them and having the resources to help them. I think I've been given just enough fame, if you will, just enough money, just enough of books and music and all of those. So I've been given just enough to build a strong platform to be able to speak from and speak on behalf of them. Those who won't ever get a chance to speak up for themselves. Being able to go to the Capitol and get a bill passed to extend foster care to age 21 in California, Tennessee, and North Carolina.
Being is able that to what do you're this, doing? Are you doing that right now?
We've done it.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
Done it. So I believe that being a star means that it's a light that shines for others, the path for others. And that's exactly what I believe a real star. When they say you want to be a superstar, yes, it's a light that you can use all your resources and shine the path, shine the way for others who don't have a chance, who don't have a voice, who won't be heard, the abused and neglected children,
right,
the weak, the poor, all colors, all races, all genres, all everyone. You know, that's what we're supposed to do in life. I believe that.
I believe that too. And I think it's... You're an inspiration, and I hope more people are a star that shines for a reason. And would you say that getting, you know, bills passed to change the foster care system, is that the biggest way that you're helping children in foster homes? Is that your proudest accomplishment?
That's a start, because when a state passes a bill like this, each county has to implement the bill. So then it's just, man, wow. It's a lot of work. It's a start. But what we need to do from a grassroots level is us, not the government. We can't expect the government to do everything. They don't even know everything. So we can't expect them to do everything. We have to take it upon ourselves to get involved in the life of a child that needs us right now. Not a month from now, a year from now. I'm talking about right now. Get involved in that. And it costs more. I love animals. I love animals. I love dogs. It costs It costs more to help a dog than it does a kid.
I bet a lot of people don't know that or realize that.
Well, when you get a vet bill
versus
a bologna sandwich,
right?
It doesn't cost much. And I'm telling you this from experience. Like, mm-hmm. I've been there. These kids do not require much. I'm not saying you don't have to give them much. I'm just saying they don't ask for, because they're not used to getting much. You know, I was a recipient of the Salvation Army Angel Tree program when I was a kid. My sister and I received a deck of Uno cards and a brown pair of men's socks. And they gave the socks to my sister. And we laughed. I mean, I was 9, she was 10. And I asked her recently, I said, did I make that up in my head, or did that really happen? She said, it happened. I said, well, what did you do to those stupid brown socks? She said, I wore them on my hands to the bus stop because my hands were cold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's what I'm talking about. These kids are growing up like this. So get involved in helping a kid. I mean, there's plenty of organizations. Start with CASA. CASA is made up of volunteers.
I've heard about CASA.
Yeah, they don't get paid. So you know that the child's best interest is in their heart, because they're not doing it for money. They don't get paid anything.
Right.
They're volunteers They're volunteers who spend 1 hour per week with a child. You can spend more, but they're required to spend 1 hour. They go to court with that kid. They speak on that kid's behalf. They can take the kid to the dentist, to just be a mentor, just be a listener, just sit and listen to them cry. And it's just 1 hour. I mean, we spend that doing what? Nothing. Looking
right.
around.
Yeah, what's an hour? You can certainly find an hour in a day.
Yeah, and I tell you what else. I'm so excited. I get so excited when I talk about this. We need men need
yeah.
to step way up and start getting involved in helping these kids. You know, I don't hunt. I don't golf. I don't do any of that stuff, and I'm not condoning it. Whatever you want to do with your life and resources, go ahead. But split that time and go and use some of that time that you're sitting in a tree stand, sitting, or standing on the golf course chasing a ball. Spend half of that time helping a kid.
Yeah. And that's a really powerful message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please. Because they don't have a dad. They've never had a dad. They've had moms. Women are doing it, man. I'm telling you, everywhere I go, all over the country, 99.9% of the time, it's a woman driving the campaign, the charity event.
Right.
It's calling me, emailing me, begging me, please come and help us raise money so we can keep the lights on at this home. It's always the women doing it. They're doing it. The men aren't doing it. They're out playing. They're goofing off. You got to get them involved. So you need to talk to your husbands, talk to your boyfriends, talk to your brothers, cousins, uncles, and encourage them. Please get involved in these kids' lives, these boys. These boys need men in their life to help them.
Yeah, for guidance. That hour is so meaningful. Jimmy, what advice would you give to people who are going through really challenging situations? You know, you've certainly gone through enough of your own, but somebody who's going through a tough situation in their own life, they're witnessing challenges. What would you say to them?
Well, if there was a magic message, as cold-hearted as this sounds, if there was a magic message, I'd already said it 100 times. I will say this. There is hope, such thing as hope, and faith. And that's how I got here. It doesn't work for everybody. Maybe some people just don't have it. It goes back to the people who can be a star for these people who have simply lost hope. And I can tell you, there's a lot of kids out there that have. And I was one of them at one time. Had it not been for my social worker, Carla,
yeah.
Had it not been for my teacher, had it not been for Cindy, my guidance counselor.
And B.
And
B also, right?
Let me tell you. Yeah.
I remember B from the book. Yes.
Yeah. B is the flagship. She was 75 years old. I was living outside couch surfing from home to home. This lady hired me to cut her grass because I was going around the neighborhood asking for work. Because that's what I did, worked. And she allowed me to cut her grass, and she gave me an ice cold Coca-Cola, and she started talking to me, and then hired me to be her lawn boy for the remainder of the summer. And I'd show up every week wearing the same clothes. She'd give me a Coca-Cola again, and she'd talk little by little every week, same scenario, Coca-Cola conversation, Coca-Cola conversation, Coca-Cola conversation, until eventually she befriended me. I started liking this 75-year-old woman and looked forward to going and cutting the grass and the Coca-Cola and donuts she gave me.
Right.
By the end of the summer, she and her husband invited me to move into their home.
It's amazing.
I had no clue they knew anything about me. That single-handedly changed every cell in my body. I was allowed to go to school. I went to high school. I didn't miss a single day of high school. I mean, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I was there every day, including senior skip day. I was the only one walking around, kind of looking at the wall. they gave me a chance to go to college. They didn't pay for it. I paid for it because I worked, and I saved up my money and paid for my books and my tuition. Now, Mr. Costner, unfortunately, was diagnosed with terminal cancer and passed away. He was 79 years old. Remember,
Russell.
I was 16.
Yeah, yep, that was 16. Sad.
Yeah, and I stayed with B. She allowed me to stay in her home, a complete stranger, allowed me to stay in her home for 6 years and gave me a chance to go to college, get a decent job. I went to work at a state prison where I worked 4 years and ran into all of my foster brothers that I'd grown up with. And then ultimately to pursue and catch my dream, which is what I'm doing right now today. But I got a letter yesterday from her daughter. And her daughter was going through, I don't know what she was going through, but she found a letter from that someone had written to B. And hence the reason why my book's called Walk to Beautiful, because the first three letters of the word beautiful is B. And that's exactly where she was.
She's
so,
an angel.
Yeah, and this letter talked about from the either the 80s or the 70s. And it was from a group of kids at a local home or some home somewhere back home in North Carolina, thanking B for sending them all of those Coca-Colas. So I wasn't the only one that they were helping.
Wow.
And I had no idea.
No. That's awesome.
I thought I was the only one because they never bragged about it. They just did it. They just got up, worked hard, and helped kids.
That's amazing.
Yep. Well, changed everybody's life.
When you met B and the stories, the chapters around your relationship with her and her husband, that was the favorite, very favorite part of the book for me. So, Jimmy, what's next for you? What are you working on? Tell us.
Well, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to build a transitional youth home, an all-girls transitional youth home in my hometown on
nice.
The property. On the property where I slept in an abandoned trailer when I was 14, start there and start building these homes in every state. It's a big goal, but it can happen. I know it can happen. And, you know, to get Walk to Beautiful turned into a film, we're trying to, you know, pitching it now, just trying to get people to read it and talk about it because
I love
the resources. Yeah, with the resources, you know, just the resources can help build something like this. You know, I don't need anything else. I've been very blessed, comfortable. But, man, imagine what that movie could inspire in people.
It would be awesome.
Yeah. It would be incredible.
I could picture the movie. I can see this on the big screen. No doubt about it.
It'll happen. It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of getting the right people together who really care,
Really, yeah.
You know, they got to make money. I know all that. I mean, it's just the way business is. But I'm talking about we need people with heart in there also that has a heart for these kids and says, man, I'm just going to, you know what? I believe in it. I'm going to do it for the right reason, get behind mm-hmm. this and just build this movie, create this film, put it out and use all of those resources to fund, to raise awareness for, and to operate these homes.
Well, I agree. We need people with heart. Well said. Where can my listeners find out more about you and your book, Walk to Beautiful?
JimmyWayne.com.
Excellent. That's really easy. And I hope everybody checks out the book. And for all those men, whether you're listening or there's women who know men, ask your men to give that hour. Jimmy discussed, so important. Jimmy, thank you very much for sharing your story of survival and how you're now able to help children everywhere. You're an inspiration, and I think you're truly making a difference. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity to share my story.
My pleasure. I also want to thank Realty Shares for their special offer in the month of April and all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay energized, focused, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.